Younger executives and people working longer means a shift in the power dynamic in the workplace. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton talks with the mentor of an Airbnb co-creator. That starts now.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. About 100 years ago or so, the life expectancy in the United States was 47. Now we've added about 30 years to that, and almost all of those are considered middle age years. It's likely that our work lives will extend until we're 75. That's a significant amount of experience, maturity, and wisdom that older workers can bring to new careers and situations. Chip Conley's new book is Wisdom at Work, The Making of a Modern Elder. He writes about his experience working with Airbnb co-creator Brian Chesney and his role as a strategic advisor and mentor to Chesney and about 100 other people, too.
But one of the effective things was I interned publicly and I mentored privately. And what that basically means is I didn't mind being the dumbest person in the room at times, as long as I wasn't always the dumbest person in the room, because then I shouldn't be there.
Right, yeah.
But if I was the dumbest person asking some really beginner's mind questions, fine. But if I needed to give some mentoring to someone, I never did it publicly. I always, you know, just had that conversation with them as an aside. And what that led to is over the course of my 5.5 years there, I have mentored more than 100 people.
This week, we have a case study of how Airbnb created and cultivated a culture of valuing employees at all stages of their career. Okay, here we go.
Chip Conley, and I'm the strategic advisor for hospitality and leadership at Airbnb.
We're going to get to that title, which is pretty snazzy, by the way.
Yeah.
But let's start with your backstory and how you wound up at Airbnb. What was your first gig?
My first gig, actually out of Stanford Business School, was working for a real estate developer here in San Francisco. And I thought it was going to be a calling, and it turned out to be a job. I did love working with the people there, but it wasn't creative enough for me. And so I, at age 26, decided to start my own real estate company, but exclusively focused on boutique hotels.
Mm-hmm.
I called the company Joie de Vivre.
Oh, yeah.
It means joy of life in French. And I love the fact that the mission statement of the company was also the name of the company. Our mission statement was to create joy of life for our employees and our customers. I bought a motel in the Tenderloin, now known as the Phoenix, and has been known as the Phoenix for almost 32 years now since I bought it. And it became a rock and roll hotel. And for the next 24 years, I ran as CEO of this company, Joie de Vivre, and created 52 boutique hotels around California, became the second largest boutique hotelier in the U.S.
I'd like to thank you for doing that, because I've stayed at several of your hotels, or your former hotels, and I've worked with a lot of your staff, because I'm not meeting you for the first time now, but when I was running LA.com years ago, and I was doing hotel reviews, I loved staying and working with your people. It was a wonderful company, and I can tell you that they all stuck to the mission statement, and they were professional, but they were trying to find joy of life. It was really good.
It's interesting. When you create a company that has culture as its strategic differentiator, people go work there, and then when they go elsewhere, they see the difference. And in some cases, you don't know what you had until it's not there anymore.
Right.
I think I'm a big believer in the idea that culture is one of the most important investments any company should make.
And I like it when I hear VCs say the same kind of thing that you're saying, too, when they
you know,
sit in that chair.
Yeah. I mean, Peter Thiel said, to excuse the expression here, but he said to Brian Chesky when he invested in Airbnb, don't f*** up the culture.
Right. Totally.
Yeah.
And we're going to come back to that, because I want to ask you specifically about that. And let's talk about how you migrated or were recruited, I think, into Airbnb. What was that story?
Well, I after 24 years of running my own boutique hotel company, but going through the two once-in-a-lifetime downturns in the same decade, the dot-com bust and then Great Recession, I was ready to move on. I didn't know what I was going to do next. Actually, there's a funny quote from Robert De Niro in the movie The Intern. He says, musicians don't retire, they quit when there's no more music left inside of them. And so that's what I felt. I felt like there was music inside of me, but I wasn't sure who to share it with. And Brian Chesky is the co-founder and CEO of Airbnb. And 5.5 years ago, when Airbnb was a small startup, and I frankly didn't know a lot of them about them, and most of my friends didn't know anything about them. The hotel industry didn't know much about them. He approached me and said, will you be my mentor? And then he said, he popped the question and said, do you want to democratize hospitality with me and become the head of global hospitality and strategy? And, you know, I was 52. I'd never worked in a tech company. I was fascinated by this, but I realized I'd be twice the age of the average employee there, and I didn't have any technology background, and I'd be reporting to Brian, 21 years younger than me, while also being his mentor.
Right. And that seems like a dichotomy that might be difficult for some. How did you, I mean, you had to accept that, first of all, you were recruited, and that doesn't happen to a lot of people.
Yeah, let's be really clear. I've written this book, which we'll talk about, and, you know, my story's unusual. In my 50s, was recruited to come to a tech company. That doesn't happen to people in their 50s very often. So I was lucky because what they really desperately needed was someone with a hospitality and travel industry background. They had 300 to 400 employees at that point. We're growing quickly, but not one person in the company had that background. So it was a tech company with a design focus, but I was able to bring my expertise in there. But what became clear quickly was it doesn't really matter in a home sharing company how many rooms a maid can clean in an hour a day. So a lot of my knowledge, my accumulated knowledge and wisdom wasn't all that valuable. But there was a bunch of other knowledge and experience I had that was very valuable. And so that was the key thing for me the first few months, was to realize, wow, I am not just a mentor here. I'm also an intern in the sense that I need to learn about tech.
That's what's great about this book, is because you were able to give lessons and take lessons, learn lessons during this whole process of onboarding for yourself. And I'm glad we pointed out that you were recruited. That is an anomaly, but that doesn't discount the lessons that are here. Yeah. And speaking as somebody who is midlife and approaching 50 and also looking around too, I'm going to have some questions about that. Mark Zuckerberg waited years before bringing an adult into the room.
Well, let's be clear. Brian Chesky is an adult.
I know, but what I mean is, well, I'm going back to the Google co-founders, and the board said you need to hire up, and that's what kind of. But Brian did that on his own. He didn't need the board to come tell him.
Exactly.
And that's what I've always valued about his approach to not just disrupting, but building a culture and a business.
He's fascinating because if there's something he wants to learn in the world, he goes out and tries to find the expert, not just a minor expert, but the expert in the world. And it could be George Tenet, who used to run the CIA, who's going to tell him about trust and safety. Or, you know, it could be John Donahoe, who was running eBay, if he wants to learn about marketplaces. So long story short is, Brian thought of me as a hotelier who had a disruptive mindset and was a bit more innovative than the average hotelier. And so that's why he came to me.
Smart enough to know you don't know something. That's an attribute that, in a small way, that's what I do.
I think that's what wisdom is. You know, wisdom is, the name of the book's Wisdom at Work. And so people ask me all the time, what's wisdom? I think wisdom is pattern recognition, being able to see patterns over time, but with a certain amount of confidence and doubt. And the question is, wisdom is about when do you have more confidence and when do you have more doubt? And so the element of that alchemy between them is suggesting that a lot of people who are young and confident in Silicon Valley have hubris. Hubris is what you need to actually sell yourself to a venture capitalist. But humility, frankly, over time is what makes a great leader. So that process of hubris and humility, or confidence and doubt, to me is what makes a person wise in terms of knowing what you don't know.
That's extremely well put. When did you start feeling wisdom at Airbnb? you said in the first few months you had to acclimate, obviously. But what was that like? What was that process?
Well, the process, yeah, I'll tell you a story. It was not about wisdom. It's about like feeling a dunce. And then I'll talk about wisdom. But on my third day, I sat in a room with engineers. I wanted to just acclimate myself to, like, what does it mean to be in a tech company? So I'm with a dozen engineers. It's a 25-year-old wizard of an engineer running the meeting. They're talking about all these things. I really don't know what they're talking about, to be honest with you. I'm making a lot of notes. And finally, at one point, he just looks at me, and, you know, there's a dozen people in the room, but he looks at me and he says, if you ship a feature and no one uses it, did it really ship? Long story short is, I looked at him bewildered, not knowing. I said, I took philosophy in college, but I didn't take any comp sci, so I have no idea what you're talking about. And it was at that point, 3 days into my time there, that I realized, wow, I am an intern. I'm as well as a mentor here. And I think that recognition, and then not running for the hills, that sense of, okay, I ran my own hotel company for 24 years. I was CEO, you know, built it to 3,500 employees. It was a big deal. But now I'm not the CEO anymore.
Right.
And I'm not in a habitat that I know all that well. So that's when I really went through this process of trying to understand, what's a modern elder? A traditional elder dispensed wisdom. A modern elder is as much a wisdom seeker as they are a wisdom keeper. So I realized I had to start by just evolving my sense of identity of who I was and become the biggest learner in the room. And that's what I did. I think learning became my way of being there. And I had the beginner's mind. And a lot of times I would ask a lot of why and what if questions in meetings, which is an unusual thing for a senior leader to ask. Usually senior leaders ask what and how questions, which are optimization questions. A why and what if question is what a four-year-old asks.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes those most naive questions helped us see a blind spot that the company had.
Right.
And so I became sort of catalytically curious.
Honestly, sometimes engineers can go down a rabbit hole and have blinders on while they're going down that hole, and the what if questions kind of pull them back out, right?
That's right. That's right. And also, you know, Airbnb is full of great people, really intelligent people, but it's also a place that's full of knowledge. And there's an element at times amongst young people where everybody wants to be smarter than each other. And there's a know-it-all culture that can happen in Silicon Valley, which means that everybody is focused on their answers, not on the questions.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's the questions that help people to actually reframe their thinking about something. So I found that to be very helpful.
You mentioned also in the first – the second answer was humility. That's something that may come with experience, right? And that comes with, like you said, confidence and doubt, but there's humility involved there too.
Humility is a function, frankly, of having a few failures along the way and knowing that you're not all-powerful. You're the little guy behind the curtain. You're not the Wizard of Oz. And
right.
So I think that humility, frankly, one of the things that I did at Airbnb that was probably one of the most effective things I did, and there's some things I didn't do so effectively, I'm sure, but one of the effective things was I interned – publicly, and I mentored privately. And what that basically means is I didn't mind being the dumbest person in the room at times, as long as I wasn't always the dumbest person in the room, because then I shouldn't be there.
Right, yeah.
But if I was the dumbest person asking some really beginner's mind questions, fine. But if I needed to give some mentoring to someone, I never did it publicly. I always, you know, just had that conversation with them as an aside. And what that led to is over the course of my 5.5 years there, I have mentored more than 100 people. And it's not even my job, but it just became a natural.
Right. And we're back to culture a little bit, too.
Yeah.
I kind of want to dive into the experience of being a certain age and starting a second career, third career. We've had other reinventors, if you will, mid-career coaches. We had John Tarnoff on a couple of times. But there's an anecdote in the book I wanted to ask you about, because
sure.
It sure sounded like Brian put a bunch of stuff on your desk pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about you were trying to get creating the world's first Airbnb global host conference from scratch.
Yes.
Can we talk about that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Well, so I loved my time there. I was 4 years in a full-time role, and then the last year and a half as a strategic advisor. Early in my time there, Brian said to me, we are a technology company and everybody connects with us online. So it's an online experience, but wouldn't it be great to bring our best hosts together to actually share best practices? And I loved the idea. And he said, well, it was like May, I think, when he said this. He says, well, let's do it this fall.
Uh-huh.
I was like, really? You want to throw a conference with people from 40 countries, 1,500 people 5 months from now? And where's my team? And it's like, well, no, you can do it. Just do it.
Oh.
Okay. So that's what happened. So, you know, that's where I use my emotional intelligence, I guess, to really recruit some people to literally do work in addition to their normal jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And we created this first thing called the Airbnb Open. The first one was in San Francisco. It was extremely successful. It was almost like a pilgrimage. The thing about Airbnb hosts around the world is they're micro entrepreneurs, and some of them are doing it as mercenaries to make money, but most of them are doing it, you know, to make money, as well as they love the idea that they're a little hospitality entrepreneur and that they're a host and that they're actually making people feel good. And so as a longtime hospitality person, they really liked me. And so I built a great relationship with them. And then we went the next year to Paris, had 6,000 hosts from 110 countries.
Wow.
And then the next year we went to Los Angeles, had 20,000 people from 108 countries. So it was just a fascinating experience. But, you know, Brian just said, let's do it. And I basically had one person to help support me.
Right. But it did take your emotional intelligence in order to get that across the goal line, right?
Because it did. And to be able to recruit a bunch of people to say, hey, we've got a short-term goal here, do this in addition to your current job, was not easy. But people could see that it was going to be a pretty interesting thing to do.
Did you think that maybe Brian didn't understand the scope of the ask?
Brian is, I have such admiration for him. I wouldn't be at Airbnb if I didn't. And yet there's an element of being naive about how much work it takes to do some things. And that's not unusual it's not unusual for younger people who don't realize sometimes what level of detail, if you're going to do it well, if quality is an essential piece of it. The thing that I like the challenge, and it was certainly a challenge.
You're in Silicon Valley, obviously, and working for Airbnb, and we were talking a little bit beforehand. I don't think I'm breaking any norms here, but And people who have sat in that chair have told me, I'm 35, I'm almost done.
Yeah.
You know, they were of a different idea. And it's been my experience, having run departments myself in multinationals, that a young person's first management job, I have to give them a 3-month big head.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
A period. You know, I mean, but I had to learn that expectation because I went through it too. I went through the 3-month big head, and then I realized that I was not being the best me.
Yeah. Let's just know that 40% of us in the world today have a boss who's younger than us. Now, that was not true 10 years ago, it might have been 10 or 20%.
Right.
So this number probably will surpass 50% in the next 10 years, especially as more and more people stay in the workplace longer. So what's going to happen is half the workforce has someone who's younger than them. Interestingly enough, a lot of these younger leaders, managers, may be brilliant about a technology or a particular specific thing that has gotten them to where they are. But most of them have not had any development or learning and development or leadership training.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes the leadership training is something you do. You've got somebody who's actually leading you, and you help support them. And in the book, in Wisdom at Work, I talk about a woman named Karen Wickrey, who is, you know, in her mid-60s, was working for Twitter and for Google. She had, I think, was it 7 managers in 9 years at Google. And in many cases, she was somebody who helped to groom the leadership skills of those who were her boss. And that's an interesting thing. That takes a heck of a lot of humility mm-hmm. to do that. But that's what I think the future is. The future of work is an intergenerational collaboration, almost like a generational potluck. And I think that, well, I don't want to be too stereotypical here. There's a little bit of stereotyping in what I'm going to say, but I think it's true. I can offer some EQ, emotional intelligence,
right.
and those millennials can offer some DQ, some digital intelligence. And by having that trade agreement, we can both be better off.
You may have already answered this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, just in case.
Mm-hmm.
Wisdom at Work, The Making of a Modern Elder. I'm speaking with Chip Connolly, the author of that book. Who is this book for?
So this book is first and foremost for somebody who feels like they wanted to actually make themselves more relevant again. And that could be somebody in the past. Midlife was 45 to 65,
mm-hmm.
and the most common use of a word after midlife was crisis.
Right.
And this is partly because we as a society didn't really have a midlife 100 years ago. Longevity in the U.S. was 47 in
right.
the year 1900, and it was 77 in the year 2000. And in that 30 years additional we got, it, most of it went in midlife. And yet we haven't really created any kind of rituals or rites of passage or celebrations to help people through their midlife.
That's a great point.
And yet today, I think midlife is 35 to 75. And the reason I think it starts at 35 is because in technology or in the entertainment industry or in advertising or to some degree in investment banking, people start feeling old in their mid-30s. And therefore, they start feeling less relevant. And I say it now goes to 75 instead of 65 because people are going to actually work longer if they're going to live to 100.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean? It means the book is really for, I think, people from 35 to 75 generally.
Mm-hmm.
But it also could be for somebody who's younger than that, who's saying, I want to understand how to build a mentorship relationship with someone older than me or a mutual mentorship relationship.
I'm 49. So,
and I'm 57.
Okay. So I'm looking for work. I'm looking for a second career kind of thing. I love what I do right now, but of course, but I'm looking for the next thing, right?
Yep.
Is this going to help me put the right vest on for that job interview? So I'll have a higher understanding of what the person, the younger person across the desk is wanting.
Yes. And this is definitely not a book specifically for how to groom yourself, both visually as well as confidence-wise. There are lots of great books on that. There are, you know, John Tarnoff.
Yeah, that's right.
John Tarnoff's done great books on that. There's lots of coaches on this. This is a little bit more the societal component of this. So this, yes, it's a handbook for somebody who might want to reinvent themselves, but it's actually a little bit more for the person who's already in the trenches.
Right.
And how does somebody okay. in the trenches work with an environment where, gosh, they feel like they're old and they're surrounded by young people? And how do you make that work better? Chapter 8 in the book, there's 10 chapters. Chapter 8 really speaks to the idea of the reinvention piece,
mm-hmm.
the rewiring instead of retiring. But that's a small piece of the book.
Are you going to be sticking around Airbnb for a while, or are you going to find a fourth?
The great news for me is that they still love me. And after 4 years of being in a full-time role, which full-time basically means double full-time, you're working lots of hours, I, a year and a half ago, moved to this strategic advisor role, and it's going pretty well.
Very cool. Chip Connolly, thank you for coming in. He's the author of Wisdom at Work, The Making of a Modern Elder. This has been special. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
That was Chip Connolly, former founder and CEO of Joie de Vivre Hotels and author of the new book, Wisdom at Work, The Making of a Modern Elder. You can pre-order the book at your local bookstore or on Amazon. And there's a link in this week's show notes that live at KGORadio.com if you want to give it a click. For the full extended version of our interview with Chip, please keyword search Techonomics wherever you pull down your podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, all of them. Coming up after the break, we shift gears and talk about having that sometimes difficult discussion about end-of-life decisions and some tech that could help make for smoother sledding.
We just don't talk that much today because we're so glued to our phones, looking at pictures and so forth. This campaign is about, you know, connecting, having stories, being able to pass on generations.
That's next. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.